The money was in the safe, since I robbed banks and did not believe in supporting them by opening an account. I put it all into a businessman's carry bag. It was only half full, so I added all the micro-tools that would fit. In the space that was left, I stuffed in as much clothing as I could, then stood on the thing until I got it closed and locked. New clothes and a disguise next. A black four-piece business suit, the fabric enriched by a pattern of tiny white buck bills. An orange roll neck, just what all the young bankers were wearing, along with the trendy porcupine herd boots with built-up heels. Add some to my height. That would help. When I left, I would wear the mustache and gold-rimmed glasses. What I could do now was darken my hair with dye and add to my fading tan. Preparations done. Woozy with beer, fatigue, and pain pills. I opened the file cabinet bed, set the alarm, and dropped into oblivion. There were giant mosquitoes circling my head. More and more of them, after my blood. Mosquitoes. I opened my eyes and blinked away the dream. My alarm watch, since I hadn't turned it off, had raised the volume on the mosquito buzzing, louder and louder until it sounded like a squadron of them diving to the attack. I pushed the button, smacked my gummy lips together, then stumbled over for a glass of water. It was full daylight outside, and the early risers were just appearing. Preparations made, I washed and dressed with care. Nifty orange gloves that matched the shirt hid my bandaged hands. When the streets were at their rush hour busiest, I seized up the carry bag, then checked carefully to make sure that the hall outside was empty. Stepped out and closed the door without looking back. This part of my life was over with. Today was the first day of my new life. I hoped. I walked to the stairs with what I hoped was a very sincere businessman-type walk, down past the first arrivals and into the street, to see the policeman on the corner looking closely at every passerby. I did not look at him, but found an attractive girl walking ahead of me with very neat legs indeed. I watched their twinkling advance and tried to forget the nearby minion of the law. Came towards him, passed him, walked away from him, waiting for the cry of recognition. It never came. Maybe he was looking at the girl, too. One down, but how many more to go? This was the longest walk that I had ever taken in my life, or at least it seemed that way. Not too fast, not too slow. I struggled to be part of the crowd, just another wage slave going to work, thinking only of profit and loss and debenture bonds, whatever debenture bonds were. One more street. Safe so far. There's the corner. The service road behind the shopping center. No place for a businessman like you, so look sharp and don't hang about. Around the corner to safety. Safety? I staggered as though I had been struck. The McSwiney's service van was outside the door, and a hulking brute of a mechanic was just going inside. Chapter 14. I looked at my watch, snapped my fingers, then turned away from the service road in case my actions were being observed, and marched on smartly until I came to the first speedy dine. Just to make my day complete, there were two policemen sitting in the first booth. Looking at me, of course. I marched past, eyes front, and found the seat farthest from them. There was an itching between my shoulder blades that I didn't dare scratch. I couldn't see them, but I knew what they were doing. They were looking at me, then talking to each other, deciding I was not quite what I looked like. Better investigate. Stand. Walk my way. Lean over my booth. I saw the blue-trousered legs out of the corner of my eye, and my heart instantly began hammering so loudly I was sure the whole restaurant could hear it. I waited for the accusing words. Waited. Let my eyes travel up the blue-clad legs. To see a uniformed linear driver sitting down across from me. "Coffee," he said into the microphone, shook his newspaper open, and began to read. My heart slowed to something resembling normal, and I silently cursed myself for suspicion and cowardice, then spoke aloud into my own microphone in the deepest voice I could sum up Black coffee and mulligatawny dumplings. Deposit $6, if you please. I inserted the coins. There was a rumble of machinery at my elbow, and my breakfast slid out onto the table. I ate slowly, then glanced at my watch, then went back to sipping my coffee. As I well knew from the earlier occasion when I had nipped into the freezer, when I had been hiding out there, 30 minutes was the minimum service time for a McSwiney's mechanic. I allowed 40 before I slid out of the booth. I tried not to think about what I would find when I finally got into the back of the fast food parlor. I remembered my parting words only too well. I would be the next person through the door. Ho, ho. The next person had been the mechanic. Had he caught the bishop? I sweated at the thought. I would find out soon enough. I passed the booth where the police had been. They were gone, out searching some other part of the city for me, I hoped, and I headed back to the shopping center, to be greeted by the glorious sight of the McSwiney's van drawing out into the road ahead of me. The key was ready in my hand as I approached the door. The road ahead was empty. Then I heard the footsteps coming up behind me. The police? With boring repetition, my heart started the thudding routine again. I walked slower as I came close to the door, then stopped and bent over and slipped the palmed key into my hand as though I had just picked it up. I examined it closely as someone came up, then passed me. A young man who showed not the slightest interest in my existence. He went on and turned into the back entrance to the market. I took one look over my shoulder, then jumped for the door before anything else happened. Turned the key, pushed. And, of course, it didn't open. The delay mechanism I had installed was working fine. It would unlock in 1 minute. 60 short seconds. 60 incredibly crawling seconds. I stood there in my fine business outfit, as out of place in this alley as teats on a boar porcupine, as we used to say back on the ranch. Stood there and sweated and waited for police or passers-by to appear. Waited and suffered. Until the key turned, the door opened, and I fell through. Empty. On the far wall, the automatic machinery clattered and whirred. The drink dispenser gurgled, and a filled container whistled down its track and vanished, to be followed by the steaming bulk of a burger. Night and day this went on, but among all this mechanical motion, no human form appeared. They had captured him. The police had the bishop. And they would capture me next. Ah, my boy, I thought it might be you this time. The bishop emerged from the freezer, immense in his insulated gear, his sleeping roll and carry-all tucked under his arm. He slammed the door behind him, and the strength went out of me with a whoosh, and I slumped down with my back to the wall. Are you all right? He asked, concern in his voice. I waved a weak hand. Fine, fine. Just let me catch my breath. I was afraid they had you. You shouldn't have worried. When you did not reappear within a reasonable time, I assumed there had been some hitch in your plans. So I rehearsed my evacuation moves, just in case the legitimate users appeared today. And they did. It is really quite cold in there. I wasn't sure how long they would be, but I was sure you had installed some way of discovering when they left. I meant to tell you no need. I found the hidden speaker and switch and listened to someone who mutters profanities while he works. After some time, the slam of the door and silence were welcome information indeed. Now, about yourself. There were problems? Problems, I burst out, laughing with relief, then stopped when I heard a hysterical edge to the sound. I told him, omitting some of the more gruesome details. He made appropriate noises at the right places and listened attentively until the bitter end. You are being too harsh on yourself, Jim. A single lapse after all the tension of the day is not to be unexpected. But not to be allowed, because I was stupid. I almost had both of us caught. It won't happen again. This is where you are wrong, he said, shaking a thick admonitory finger. It could happen at any time, until you have trained yourself in your work. But you will be trained, and trained efficiently. Of course, until a lapse like this one will be impossible. You have done incredibly well for one of your inexperience. Now you can only improve. And you will teach me how. How to be a successful crook like you. His brow furrowed at my words, and his expression was grave. What had I said that was wrong? I chewed my sore lip with worry as he unrolled his bedroll in silence, spread it out, then sat upon it cross-legged. When at last he spoke, I hung upon his every word. Now your first lesson, Jim. I am not a crook. You are not a crook. We do not want to be criminals, for they are all individuals who are stupid and inefficient. It is important to comprehend and appreciate that we stand outside of society and follow strict rules of our own, some of them even stricter than those of the society that we have rejected. It can be a lonely life, but it is a life you must choose with your eyes open, and once the choice has been made, you must abide by it. You must be more moral than they are, because you will be living by a stricter moral code. And this code does not contain the word crook. That is their word for what you are, and you must reject it. But I want to be a criminal. Abandon the thought and the title. It is, and you must excuse me saying it, a juvenile ambition. It is only your emotional striking out at the world you dislike and cannot be considered a reasoned decision. You have rejected them, but at the same time accepted their description of what you are, a crook. You are not a crook. I am not a crook. Then, what are we? I asked, all eagerness. The bishop steepled his fingers as he intoned the answer. We are citizens of the outside. We have rejected the simplistic, boring, regimented, bureaucratic, moral, and ethical scriptures by which they live. In their place, we have substituted our own, far superior ones. We may physically move among them, but we are not of them. Where they are lazy, we are industrious. Where they are immoral, we are moral. Where they are liars, we are the truth. We are probably the greatest power for good to the society that we have discarded. I blinked rather rapidly at that one, but waited patiently, because I knew that he would soon make all clear. He did. What kind of a galaxy do we live in? Look around you. The citizens of this planet, and of every other planet in the loose organization known as the Galactic League, are citizens of a fat, rich union of worlds that has almost forgotten the real meaning of the word crime. You have been in prison. You have seen the dismal rejects whom they consider criminals. And this is what is called a frontier world. On the other settled planets, there are few malcontents and even fewer who are socially maladjusted. Out there, the handful who are still being born, in spite of centuries of genetic control, are caught early and their aberrations quickly adjusted. I made one single trip off-planet in my life, a tour of the nearest world. It was terrible. Life on those planets has all the color and wonder of a piece of wet cardboard. I hurried back to Bit of Heaven, for loathsome as it can be at times, it is still a bit of heaven compared to the others. Someday, I would like to see these other worlds, and so you shall, dear boy, a worthy ambition. But learn your way around this one first, and be thankful they don't have complete genetic control here yet, or the machines to mentally adjust those who struggle against society. On other planets, the children are all the same, meek, mild, and socially adjusted. Of course, some do not show their genetic weakness, or strength, as we call it, until they are adults. These are the poor, displaced ones who try their hands at petty crimes, burglary, shoplifting, rustling, and the like. They may get away with it for a week or two, or a month or two, depending on their degree of native intelligence. But as sure as atomic decay, as sure as the fall of leaves in the autumn, and just as predestined, the police will eventually reach out and pull them in.